Do you see the deals on these brands?
Of course you can't. This is a podcast.
But when you go to Ross this spring, you'll see brands you know at prices you love. We're talking all the shoes, hues, and oohs at 20 to 60% off department store prices. Go see the savings at Ross.
On July 21st, 2015, the first episode of Our Fake History ever was released into the void that is the internet. 100 people downloaded that episode when it first came out, and I'm pretty sure I knew every one of them personally. It was a modest showing, to be sure. That's why it kind of blows my mind these days when I get an email from someone in Germany or Australia or some other faraway place saying that they've been listening since July of 2015. I almost can't believe it. The month before I launched this show, I got married. And I can tell you that not everyone who attended my wedding listened to the first episode of Our Fake History. So the thought of a complete stranger in a country very distant from my own getting on board with the podcast right at the jump, well, I guess that's the magic of the internet. If you are one of those people and you are still listening, well, holy mackinaw, that is dedication. But now, of course, you've got a lot of company around here. Back in season one, when I first did a Q&A show, I proudly broadcast my overall download numbers for that year, right down to the last numeral. 6 years in, now that feels maybe a little gauche, maybe a little braggy. And since I've migrated my feed to different hosting sites 4 times since I've started this show, getting an exact count on the overall download numbers actually requires me to do some math. And as we have established, math isn't exactly my strong suit. But some of you asked, and today's show is all about you folks, the listeners. So, for the curious, now as I celebrate the 6th anniversary of the show, the 137 episodes of Our Fake History have been downloaded over 15 million times. I find that number to be both unbelievable and deeply humbling. What started out as a pure labor of love and a total shot in the dark somehow found an audience. And by and large, you folks have stuck with me. You've also told your friends about the show. You've written nice reviews. Some of you wrote articles. Others aggressively boosted Our Fake History on Reddit. A whole crew of you believe that this free podcast is worth spending money on every month, and you've become patrons. This podcast probably would have died sometime in like mid-2016 had it not been for the enthusiasm and unwavering support of you, the listeners. Once it became clear that a buttload of people were listening, I just couldn't let you down. I had to keep them coming. It also felt like this thing had some momentum. And now 6 years later, I can say that thanks to your support, we've rounded the hump. Our Fake History really has become a job, and a job I really like doing. So that means it's not going anywhere. We did it. We made it. So it felt like it was time to really connect again, to do a whole show directed by listener questions. Now, I know the end of season 6 feels like an arbitrary time to drop a Q&A show, but you know, this was a crazy year. While some of us are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, we shouldn't write off how profoundly intense this pandemic has been. And I know that everyone had their own war with this thing, and many of you are still very much in the trenches, but we all went through something. Many of you reached out to me and let me know that this podcast helped you get through the days of COVID, at least in a small way. That is heavy and beautiful and beyond what I ever thought I would accomplish with this thing. So it felt like it was time to reflect. Also, this was a crazy year of change for the podcast. I switched podcast networks, which brought some changes and a few technical hiccups, but it also brought all sorts of amazing new opportunities to the show. I think that the switch also just happened to coincide with some of the best shows we've ever created on the podcast. I know I've said this a few times now, but season 6 felt like a new high. So it seemed like a good time to look out, survey the scenery, and talk to you folks a bit more directly. So today's show is going to be made up entirely of listener questions. You folks sent me some seriously interesting stuff, so I think it's going to be a good time. Will I be able to give satisfying answers to your many queries? I guess we'll find out today on Our Fake History. Episode number 138, and questions 2021. Hello and welcome to Our Fake History. My name is Sebastian Major, and this is the podcast where we explore historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story that it simply must be told. This week, I am devoting the entire episode to answering questions posed by you, the listeners. Now, if you're new to the show and this is the first podcast you have ever downloaded from Our Fake History, you should know that this is an unusual episode. I don't do Q&A episodes all that often. This is actually only the second ever one that I've done over the past 6 years. Usually, the show is me exploring a historical myth or a misconception. I'm telling you stories and doing a bit of historical detective work. So if you've just downloaded the show for the first time, just know that you're in for something a little different. This show, this episode right here, is really for the OG fans, for the people that have been with me for a long time, or those of you who maybe just found me, but have binged so much Our Fake History that your internal monologue is starting to sound like me mispronouncing place names. The bingers in the crowd, you know who you are. Now, before we jump into the questions, I want to let everyone know that at long last, the promised extra episode on Ethiopia's Jewish population, known as the Beta Israel, is now available for patrons supporting at $3 or more. The story of the Beta Israel proved to be even more surprising and complex than I could have ever imagined. So if you dug the shows on Ethiopia and the Ark of the Covenant, I think that this is going to be a great little companion piece. So if you want to hear it and you're not already a patron, then go to patreon.com/ourfakehistory and start pledging at $3 or more every month. I also want to remind everyone that the Season 6 t-shirt designs voted on by the folks on the Facebook group are now up at TeePublic. The easiest way to get there is just to go to ourfakehistory.com and follow the links to our TeePublic store. There you'll find all the amazing new designs, and all the old ones too, for t-shirts, hoodies, tote bags, mugs, stickers, and all sorts of other stuff. All the art is created by the great Frank Fiorentino, the resident artist here at Our Fake History. As you know, he makes amazing episode art each week for this show. Most podcast apps will show the art, but some don't. And this breaks my heart that not all the apps show the art. So if you're curious about the art and your app isn't showing it to you, go to ourfakehistory.com and check it out. and then think about maybe buying a t-shirt with some of that art on it. Okay, so times have clearly changed since the last time I did a Q&A show. Back then, when I put out a call for questions, I got, I don't know, maybe 20 emails, which at the time I thought was a lot. This time, I got well over 100. I also got stuff on Facebook and Twitter, even though I said just emails. But hey, you know, I'm a high school teacher. I know how it goes. There's always a couple kids who don't read the assignment sheet. But still, the response this time has been wild. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much. But what that's meant is that I really haven't been able to respond to each and every one of you. So if you sent an email for the Q&A, I'm sorry that I was unable to send you a personal response. I really do try and respond personally to every email that I get and every message I get on Facebook. But this time it was just impossible. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who took the time to write a question and my apologies for not being able to connect with you directly. The other thing is that many of you out there had very similar questions for me. So in cases where I got multiple versions of the same question, I'm going to be answering those questions as a group. So what does that mean? Well, it means I'm going to be paraphrasing commonly asked questions and giving one answer for all of them. So that means I'm not going to be able to say all the names of the people who asked some version of that question. Now, you will notice that I am going to be shouting out the names of some listeners, and that's usually because they have written a question that is so specific that I feel like I need to read directly from their email. So if I'm going to put their words in the podcast, I feel like I've got to credit them more directly. So hopefully no one's upset about a missed name or about the inclusion of their name. My intention is not to offend or play favorites. It's just kind of how this whole thing came together. I hope you understand. Also, it's important to note that I will not be able to get to all the questions that were sent to my email inbox. I got way too many. So if you wrote me an email, but I did not get around to answering your question, then please just put it in your back pocket, and the next time I do one of these, send it in again. The final thing I want to say before I get going is that unlike most of my shows, this show's not going to be scripted. Okay, everything up to this point, I have had a script. But once I get into answering the questions, I'm going to be off script. So that means I'm going to be doing my best to answer these questions in a real authentic, off-the-cuff kind of way. What does that mean for the listener? Well, it might mean a lot more hums and haws and uhs. It's going to be a little bit more stream of consciousness. But hey, that's the fun of these episodes, right? A little less polished and maybe a little more real. All right, so let's get going with our very first question. I wanted to start off with what I thought was maybe one of the more hilarious questions I received. We all just heard the theme music for the show, so I thought it would be good to get right into it right off the top. So here's a question from Susan Klester. She writes, quote, "Please, please, please let me know what the first line of your theme song says. I've been suffering with not being able to make out the words for all 134 episodes of your amazing, wonderful podcast. There's nothing better than a Wombly child is what I hear. I'm sure this is a nonsensical Mondegreen. There's nothing better than a woman's child. There's nothing better than a woman child. Also, what's the origin of the name Dirty Church for your band?" Okay, thanks, Susan. All right, so I kind of love that that song has entered the pantheon of misheard lyrics. You're not the first person to reach out to me and tell me that they've heard those lyrics in a weird way. Other suggestions I've got have been, there's nothing better than a woman's thighs, and there's nothing better than a well-placed knife. All of these are wrong. Now, this misheard lyric thing really delights me as a music fan because it puts that song in a pantheon of great songs that also have famously misheard lyrics, right? Jimi Hendrix did not say, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy." John Fogerty was not telling you to find a bathroom on the right. My very favorite one is in university, I had a friend and she swore that the song Tiny Dancer by Elton John went, "Hold me closer, Tony Danza." So, first, for those of you that don't know, yes, Dirty Church is my band. I've fessed up to this before on the podcast. I was coy about it in the early years. I just wanted to make it sound like Dirty Church were just some random cool band from Toronto, but they're definitely my band. I'm singing those lyrics in the theme song. I wrote those lyrics in the theme song. So, yeah, I do know what they are about. The song is called Lies. Now, I wrote this song well before I started the podcast, but I've always been interested in the idea of dishonesty, the idea of untruth, the idea of myth-making. And so I put all those ideas into that song that I wrote. It's all about the nature of lying. I was also really inspired by a Canadian playwright named Daniel McIver. And I know the Canadian theater heads out there really know who Daniel McIver is. But he's an amazing Canadian playwright who in the 90s did this series of one-man shows. And one of them was called Here Lies Henry. And it was all about the afterlife. And this guy Henry comes on stage and his job is to tell you about the afterlife, except it becomes very clear that Henry is a liar. And there, you know, the pun in the name, the double entendre, Here Lies Henry. So there's an amazing part of that play where Henry goes on and talks about all the different types of lies. I got introduced to that play when I was in high school. I thought it was so awesome. And I used to do a monologue when I had to go up and do prepared monologues for the theater school that I went to, where I would do this whole thing about the different types of lies from the play Here Lies Henry. So I think I put a lot of that into the song Lies. Now, when it came time to pick theme music for the show, I loved that that song had a big buildup. I loved the big saxophone part. And I loved that lyrically, it connected to the themes of the show. So what are those lyrics? They are, "There's nothing better than a well-placed lie." That's what you hear at the beginning of the show. There's nothing better than a well-placed lie. Now, from there, the song goes, "There's nothing better than a well-placed lie, but are you strong enough to pay the price? You think you got another chance at true, but the story came unglued. The facts are not objective, a matter of perspective. I never meant to be untrue. If I could get a witness to test my story's fitness, I'd never turn my back on you." There's a lot more words. I like wordy things. Can you tell? But that's what it is. You hear, "There's nothing better than a well-placed lie." And to me, that is a perfect line to introduce you to our fake history. As for the name Dirty Church, that was actually suggested by my buddy Ryan Warner. Now, Ryan would eventually become the bass player in Dirty Church, but early on, he was just a buddy, and he helped us record our first EP. He was sort of our de facto producer in the early days. But Ryan suggested Dirty Church after we had been banging around ideas about the band going on stage and having costumes and a whole sort of revivalist religion shtick, that we were these crazed preachers that were going to convert you to our religion of rock and roll. We batted around the names Boss Priest and the Boss Prophets. I always liked the Boss Prophets, but the other guys in the band thought it sounded too much like a ska band name. And then Ryan suggested Dirty Church, and everyone liked Dirty Church. Now, some people think that this name is quite blasphemous, but I never perceived it that way because we weren't saying that your church was the dirty church. We are saying that our church is the dirty church. This is the dirty church. We are trying to convert you to the dirty church. I know for some people that might be maybe a little more edgy if you are sensitive about religious topics, but we thought it was just good fun. So that's the story of Dirty Church. But while we're on the topic of names, I want to address a question I got from a number of you. And that is, how did I pick the name of the show, Our Fake History? And have I ever had any problems with that name? Have people ever gotten the wrong impression of what the show is about because of the name Our Fake History? Okay, that's a really good question. So first, how did I come up with the name Our Fake History? Now remember, when I started this show, it was 2015. It was a year before fake news became the catchphrase that it became. Now that was both a blessing and a curse for this podcast. In some ways, it made the podcast seem like it was like of the moment capturing the zeitgeist. In other ways, it associated the podcast with all the baggage that came with that phrase, fake news, for good or for ill. Now, the issues with the name are that sometimes people just assume that the show is going to be fiction. They think that it's going to be some guy making up a fake history. And I remember in the early days of the show, I tried to get Our Fake History listed on a website that pointed people to history podcasts. And I reached out to the person that ran that site and they were like, look, man, I'm only interested in real history. Your fake history show is not really what we do here. And I had to write back and it's like, no, it really is a real history show. I'm looking at historical myths and misconceptions and busting them. That's the idea. And they were still pretty skeptical. And I think it was only after the show got a real following that that particular website came around and put me on their list. The other issue has been that some people assume, because of the title of the show, that I have a very specific political perspective, that I'm perhaps more lumped in with the Alex Joneses of the world, that I'm a conspiracy theorist who is going to say that all the history you've ever heard is actually fake. And obviously, that's not what I do. So when people come to me expecting an Alex Jones conspiracy type show, and they get me, they can be disappointed by that. But despite all that, I still really love the name Our Fake History, and I'm glad I stuck with it. The reason I chose that name is not only are we delving into misconceptions about history or myths that exist within history, but I really like the idea that it is ours, right? That this fake history isn't just something that's being imposed on us by the man, but that history is something that we create as a community. And I know I'm getting real public history masters on you here, but I believe that the creation of history isn't just a one-way street. It's something we do together. It's something we are constantly negotiating together. And the falsehoods and the narratives that get wrapped into it are part of it. It is our truly our fake history. And so when I'm busting these myths, the hope is to give us more clarity on our past, but also to explore the power that those narratives have, and to maybe reincorporate them into our understanding of humanity, if not our understanding of, you know, the hard and fast historical facts. So our fake history to me is a very inclusive idea, right? We have created these narratives and it's up to us as a community to pick them apart again. Is it a little idealistic? Maybe, but I liked the feeling of that. I also wanted the title to hint at the idea that perhaps all history is in some way influenced by narrative, myth-making, and storytelling, that perhaps there is no pure history. Now, I do really believe that there are some things that are more accurate than others, and as you know on the show, I really try and separate those things out. There are things that we can say are true and other things we can say are not true. However, because the writing of history is a narrative act, in a way, all of our history is our fake history. And I think the sooner we realize that and understand that and are comfortable with that, the sooner we can actually get to some sort of truth. Is that a paradox? Maybe it is a paradox. I like paradoxes. And I like that the podcast name hints at that paradox. So, yeah, I know. Maybe that's heady. But, guys, I might be heady. I might be up my own butt, too. There's also that. So, I don't know. That was my thinking on that. Okay. I think those first few questions gave you a feel for what we're in for today. So, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go deeper into your questions. So now I'd like to get into some of the most commonly asked questions. Many of you wanted to know if I had a favorite episode, a least favorite episode, or an episode I was dying to revisit or maybe go back and redo. So first of all, it's really, really hard for me to pick a favorite episode. I kind of love all of them. I know that's maybe a cop-out, but for me to make an episode at all, I need to find something about the topic that I genuinely find interesting. I need to get excited about it a little bit. So every single one of these shows has something about it that I really love or really enjoy. I really like all of this stuff, and I feel what makes the show interesting to listen to is that, you know, you guys get that I really like it. So if I was making one that I just hated, I might just abandon it. But there have been some shows that have been easier to make, some that have just flowed out of me, and others that I've felt have been a bit more of a chore. When I think back on my favorites, immediately my mind goes to the episodes I did on the origins of rock and roll. Those were really fun to make. I also really loved making the show on Robert Johnson. So yeah, the music shows are high in my esteem. But this season, I really loved making the series on the War of 1812. I loved making the series on Gilgamesh. Last season, I really loved making the series on the first Chinese emperor. There's something that I love from every single season, and really there's something I enjoy in every single show. But when I think of my least favorite shows, they're usually the ones that have to do with debunking a specific pseudo-historical argument. I know I've said this before, but trying to pick apart the arguments of pseudo-historians can feel like checking someone's math homework. It's exhausting, and you have to engage with the minutiae of their logic only to discover that at the heart of it, it's completely empty, it's completely hollow. They've taken you on this roundabout journey. And so I feel like part of the fun of the show is, I kind of do that dirty work for you. But those are not always fun. The two shows I did specifically on Graham Hancock were hard to do. They were hard to do. Also because I know that people that really love Graham Hancock are going to come back at me with specifics. So I needed to be thorough. I needed to be able to justify my position on those writers. And it was exhausting. So I don't love making those shows as much. Many of those pseudo-historical writers also employ a logical fallacy that is known as the Gish Gallop. This is something I've learned about since reading Hancock and Gavin Menzies and a few others. What is the Gish Gallop? It's this technique where a writer will overload you with facts. So they will give you some facts that are legit, some facts that are phony, some things that are pure speculation, a couple other facts that are real, and it'll just come out in this never-ending stream of stuff. And so it makes it really hard for someone to refute their points because you now have the hard work of separating the wheat from the chaff in their argumentation. It's actually a very clever argumentative tool. It's a rhetorical trick, but it's a bad faith argument, right? You're putting the work on your opponent to like separate the good from the bad in the argumentation. And what it essentially does is it means that your opponent is going to be boring to listen to, right? They are now the person who's checking your math homework, and you sounded like you were someone with a million great arguments when really you had this, you know, massive of some good and some bad. And so I hate engaging with that stuff. Well, maybe there's a part of me that likes engaging with that stuff a little bit, only because it's instructive to show how that rhetorical trick works, but it can be exhausting. Now, is there a show that I wish I could go back and redo or revisit? Well, when I listen back to the stuff I recorded in the first season, there's things about them I don't like. Sometimes I feel like I was a little too brief in a lot of those episodes. Maybe there are some out there that think that that brevity was actually a good thing. But there's a number of topics that if I was doing them now, I would give them way more time and attention. I feel like my Napoleon series was way too brief, and there's a part of me that wishes I could go back and explore more about Napoleon. The one, though, that I think is perhaps the most egregious and I may end up redoing is my episode on Shakespeare and the Shakespeare authorship controversy. When I created that one, I still thought that the shows all had to be one-offs. I wasn't doing series yet. And I also kind of characterized the anti-Stratfordian theory. So Stratfordian means that you believe that Shakespeare was Shakespeare. I characterized those anti-Stratfordian theories as being just like the work of laughable cranks. And I do kind of believe that, but I don't think I gave them their due. I didn't really live in those arguments the way I would now. And recently, I was a guest on another podcast called Hard to Believe. And the host of that show, he is what we call an Oxfordian. So he believes that the Earl of Oxford, Edward de Vere, was the true author of the Shakespeare plays. And he wanted to talk to me about the Shakespeare authorship controversy. And I felt like I didn't have all the facts at my fingertips anymore. I still would characterize myself as a Stratfordian. I do really believe that Shakespeare was Shakespeare. But I felt like I needed to go back, reimmerse myself in all of the facts there, reimmerse myself in the argument for and against Shakespeare and really explore that in a more thorough way. And maybe I'll do it with the host of Hard to Believe. I know that he's very passionate about that particular case. So Shakespeare, that's the one I may return to. And also, as someone that teaches English as well as history and other social studies courses, I've got a lot of thoughts about Shakespeare. So that's one I think I may go back and redo one day. Next, many of you wanted to know if I still have topics that are off limits. So the last time I did a Q&A episode, I believe I said that religious topics in general were kind of a no-go area for me. But if you've been listening, you might know that I have been treading into that territory lately. I've been feeling a bit more confident speaking about those topics and hopefully doing it in a way that is balanced and thoughtful and respectful. I even threw out to my patrons when they got to vote on an extra episode when we hit a Patreon goal. I threw out to them if they wanted me to do an episode on the historical Jesus. And interestingly, the patrons voted no. No, we'd rather if you did not go there. They instead wanted an episode on Nikola Tesla. And I ended up creating like a 3-hour episode on Tesla for my patrons. But that was interesting, right? I threw it out there like, should I go there? Should I do this perhaps untouchable topic? And the people that follow me were like, no, I'd rather if you stayed away from it. So that was interesting to me. In many ways, I'm feeling more bold than ever. So there are fewer topics that I feel like are off limits right now. But whatever the topic is, I always need to feel like I've learned enough about it that I can approach it in a way that is reasonable, thoughtful, and respectful of the culture that it comes from. Okay, listener Liam Dodd wants to know, what is your favorite bat poop crazy theory? Obviously false, but fun. I think my favorite crazy theory has to be the new chronology, or the phantom time hypothesis. It also has an amazing name, the phantom time hypothesis. So you folks might remember I did an episode on phantom time a few seasons back. This is the theory that hundreds of years of history, and in some cases thousands of years of history, simply did not happen. That historians made up hundreds upon hundreds of years of historical stories. This is wild. This is a wild, wild belief system. Now, the phantom time hypothesis, which believes that there were about 300 years inserted into what we think of as medieval times in Europe, that one is very easily disproven. The new chronology, which has a Russian mathematician behind it, is a bit more complex and uses some pretty esoteric math to prove its point. But it's equally bananas. It is completely bananas. If you want all my thoughts on those particular theories, go back and listen to the episode, What is Phantom Time? Now, I think the reason I am so fascinated by those particular theories is that it goes to the heart of a phenomenon I think we've been seeing a lot of in our society over the last few years. And it's sort of when skepticism gets twisted into credulity. Do you know what I'm saying here? It's a very good thing to be skeptical. And there's nothing wrong with going like, hey, maybe the mainstream narrative is not entirely accurate. Maybe we are being fed a line here. I think we should approach anything we are presented with some healthy skepticism. But as soon as you get to the point where you reject any piece of information because it's come from a quote-unquote mainstream source or from a quote-unquote conventional source, well, then you're actually not being skeptical anymore. Now you've just developed a new kind of prejudice. And what we find is that many people will just privilege fringe sources. They won't ask tough questions about the fringe sources simply because they believe that because those sources are not tainted by the mainstream, they are somehow more truthful. That is not true skepticism. True skepticism is putting everything through the ringer, right? It is putting all sources through the same rigorous type of analysis. The thing about the phantom time hypothesis and the new chronology is that it appeals to people who believe that they have been lied to. So if you are someone that is predisposed to believe that, you know, the mainstream historians are trying to warp our understanding of the past, then something like the new chronology is very appealing. You go, oh, look, this mathematician has a complex mathematical formula that proves that we have been lied to. However, I think that many people that get on board with those theories are not really asking the same tough questions to that Russian mathematician that they are to the more conventional historians. So I'm fascinated by that. It's something that has led to some rather dark moments in the past few years. But I'm just, again, I told you, I love paradoxes, and I'm kind of amazed by the paradox of someone who is so skeptical and really sees themselves as a very skeptical person than being swindled by a charlatan. So those are my thoughts on that. I also want to give a quick shout out to the podcast The Constant, hosted by Mark Chrysler. Mark just did a great episode on phantom time and the new chronology and a number of other theories that suggest that hundreds of years of history did not happen. And I think Mark actually sums it up much more poetically than I ever have. So check that out. All right. Let's take one more break, and when we come back, we'll get into a few more of your questions. Okay, let's get into a few more of your questions here. Aaron Pearl asks, why do you say just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't real? When just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't history would be a more accurate statement. All right, thank you, Aaron. Now, I know Aaron has actually reached out to me about this before. Now, for those of you who don't listen right to the end of the show, I know there's lots of people that like to dip out right after I say, okay, and that is totally fine. But if you listen right to the end, then you know that my final sign-off is, my name is Sebastian Major, and just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't real. I just stumbled upon that little catchphrase. I thought it summed up the spirit of the show. It reminds us that even things that are false, that are not actually true, tend to take on a reality and a spirit all of their own. A fake thing can have very real consequences. Now, Aaron makes a very good point that in the end, ultimately what I'm saying is that just because something didn't happen doesn't mean that it doesn't have historical value, right? Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't history. In a way, that would be a more accurate and better sign-off. I really don't have an argument against it, Aaron. You're right. You're right. It probably is better. I don't think I'm going to change it. I've had the same sign-off for 137 episodes now, so I'm going to stick with it just for the sake of consistency and the sake of tradition. Now, I know that consistency and tradition are not always the best reasons to do something, but in this case, I'm just going to go with what I like. But, Aaron, you make a good point. You are correct. I guess I'm just going to be stubborn on this one. Sorry, man, but I see where you are coming from. All right. This next one is a really challenging question, and it comes from a friend of mine. And I swear to God, I'm not just picking it because I know this person personally. I just thought it was a great question. But Ross Watt has asked, in your opinion, which historical myth has had the most profound impact on the course of human history? Or to ask another way, what was the greatest duping of all time? Okay, this is a really challenging question, so thanks for that, buddy. First, I think we need to set aside religions in general. If you are not a believer of any particular faith system, then the origin stories of those faiths are going to be perceived by you as fake history. The origin stories of faiths have had an enormous impact on global society. So if you are not a believer, then obviously those stories are going to be the most impactful historical myths. If you are a believer, then of course you do not see those stories as fake history. You see those stories as profound, sacred truths. So I think we just need to set those aside. But I think that needs to be mentioned just as a starting point. Now, beyond that, it gets really tough. There's two that have come to mind while I've been mulling this over. One is the myth of Terra Nullius. Now, that's a Latin term that means empty earth, empty land. And in all of our shows about colonialism or the kind of encounter between Europeans and indigenous people, this concept has sort of been floating around in the background, but it hasn't been something that I've talked about specifically. Terra Nullius is the idea that places in North and South America and places like Australia were quote unquote empty before Europeans got there. Terra Nullius basically was a principle that allowed colonialism to go forward without any impediments. It was a belief that indigenous people had no ownership over the land that they were on, or had not productively, quote unquote, worked the land. All of this is, you know, complete hogwash. In Canada and the United States, this myth comes up a lot when we are discussing the expansion westward, the idea that the western portion of the North American continent was empty, just waiting to be filled with industrious settlers. But of course, that is not true. It was filled with human beings who had been there for tens of thousands of years and had developed rich cultures. The belief that those cultures were nothing, which is what Terra Nullius very clearly kind of says, leads to really terrible things in the history of North America. A very similar process happened on the continent of Australia. I actually just recently got a very impactful email from a listener who is an Indigenous Australian, and she reminded me of how Terra Nullius, or the idea of Terra Nullius, the myth of Terra Nullius, affected the fate of her people in Australia. So I think Terra Nullius is a myth that has had a huge impact on the history of the world, And it was a particularly pernicious myth, even though it seems so benign, right? We're just saying that there's nothing here. Well, by saying that there's nothing there, you are erasing the history and culture of millions of human beings. Now, this is an idea that I'm hoping to explore later in some future series of the show, but for now, I'll just leave it at that. The other big historical myth that may have had the most impact in the 20th century, I think, is the so-called stabbed in the back myth. What's this? So, this comes out of World War I. This was a belief that became very popular in Germany that Germany had never truly lost the First World War. That, you know, because the German army always occupied parts of Belgium and France on the Western Front, that they never properly lost the war. The war never came to German soil. So a belief started to be spread that the only reason that Germany surrendered was because they weren't being supported on the home front, that agitators back in Germany, be they socialists or, you know, left Democrats or Jewish people, had in some way stabbed the German army in the back. This myth was a favorite of Adolf Hitler's. Now, the reasons that Germany surrendered at the end of World War I are many and multitudinous. It's extremely complicated, but it's not so simple as they were just stabbed in the back. Also, people like Adolf Hitler were able to scapegoat ethnic groups like Jewish people for the apparent defeat of the German army. This idea, this myth, was instrumental in the rise of the Nazi Party and then ultimately in the Holocaust. I know, these are dark. These are dark legends, but you know, when you're talking about the greatest dupings of all time, the stabbed in the back myth really comes to mind because it led to one of the greatest tragedies of the 20th century. It led to World War II. It led to the rise of the Nazis. Now, I would love to unpack in greater detail all the reasons why Germany lost World War I and everything that went into the German decision to surrender, but we simply do not have the time here. Perhaps one day I will do a series on World War I. But here's the thing. Dan Carlin did the quintessential World War I series, Blueprint for Armageddon, on hardcore history. So I think all us other history podcasters sort of, defer to Dan when it comes to those big topics. So if you're interested, you should really download that series of podcasts and really get into World War I. But for now, let it suffice to say that Jewish people were not the reason that the German army lost World War I. That is a nefarious lie. Okay, so I'll leave that there for now. All right. Ross, thanks for the question. You took me to some dark places, man. You took me to some dark places, so I hope you're happy. All right, speaking of dark places, I've got one last question, and I really wanted to get into it, so here it goes. Joseph Stein asks, how do you feel about violence being such a major theme throughout history? What does this make you feel about humanity? It seems like most episodes are about war. Okay, thank you very much, Joseph. All right, I have a lot of thoughts on this. First, we have to understand the different things that history is. Okay, so there's history as the record of all human experience. And then there's history as a literary genre. So this is why history is imperfect. This is why I say that all history is in some way fake history. It's impossible for us to accurately record all of human experience. Everything you do, everything you experience, everything you go through, all of that is technically part of the human story. Everything that everyone has ever done, thought, or experienced is part of the human story. That contains multitudes. Now, trying to record that, trying in some way to put that into a book or a documentary or a podcast series is, by definition, an impossible task. History as a literary genre has focused on moments of conflict. Now, conflict and violence is part of the human story, but it's not the only part of the human story. We need to remember that. There is also love, there is kindness, there is art, there is humor, there is joy, there is celebration, there's a nice MLT when the mutton is nice and lean and the tomatoes are juicy and thick. Nothing better in the world. Right? All of this is part of the human story. Now, when historians traditionally, especially ancient historians, medieval historians, when they sat down to write a book of history, they tended to gravitate to the big moments of conflict. When you think about the first two big works of history in the Western canon, they are Herodotus's histories and Thucydides' history of the Peloponnesian War. Now, Herodotus wrote about a lot of things, but he also spent a lot of time talking about war, and specifically the conflict between the Greek city-states and the Persian Empire. Thucydides' book is explicitly about war. So I think these two books sort of set the tone of the Western canon. From then on in, it was simply understood that warfare was quote unquote history. That is the significant event that must be recorded. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this. Obviously, warfare is particularly dramatic. It makes for good writing. These can be cultural touchstones for groups of people. Identities can be forged in conflict. Great victories and great defeats can be moments of pride for a people or moments of great sorrow for a people. War is dramatic. And so it gets a lot of ink. It's something we write a lot about. It's really not until maybe even the 20th century that you get a movement of historians who don't want to talk about politics and war and those big things. The movement of social history, which is trying to bring the everyday experience into the historical record, is something that is, you know, relatively recent. Now, I'm sure we could go back and find early examples of it in other times and places. But, you know, social history really only gets popular as a type of writing in the 1970s. Before that, we focused on conflict. We focused on war. And this isn't just a Western thing. When you look at the Chinese histories, they did much of the same. Look at the Japanese histories. They did much of the same. Even in, you know, indigenous storytelling traditions, you know, warfare looms large. It is always right there. So if your question is, what does this tell me about humanity? It tells me that humanity sees a lot of great stories in conflict. It sees a lot of great stories in war. I don't think it means that as a species, we are just hopelessly violent and that's it. Actually, you know, for many of us, I would say that unless you're like living in a war zone or you're living in a particularly violent place, for most of us, an instance of violence is actually an unusual thing in the day-to-day for us. When something violent happens to us or around us, it is shocking. Right now, of course, there are a million exceptions to that, and I don't mean to diminish the experience of anyone that is growing up or living in a particularly violent place, but I think you guys know what I mean here, right? We're not experiencing violence as much as our history writing might suggest that we are. So I think I'm a shameless optimist, maybe. I have perhaps a brighter view of humanity than most. We have done horrible, horrible things to each other. And any honest study of history needs to recognize that. Our injustice to one another, our hatred towards one another. But there are also so many moments of kindness and lightness and connection. And so if you open yourself up to seeing those as well, then, you know, maybe you can have a more balanced idea of humanity. Guys, that sounded really grandiose. That sounded really grandiose. I'm sorry if that sounded like preacher from the mountaintop kind of nonsense. I don't know. You put a mic in front of me and all of a sudden I'm pontificating. But hey, man, Joseph asked. He wanted to know my thoughts on humanity. So I just told you, oh man, I hope that doesn't make me sound like an egomaniac. Well, like I said, today was all about being authentic and real and just really, you know, letting you see me as the person that I am. Take me or leave me. Okay, before we let you go, I want to tell you how we are going to be wrapping up season 6. So this is the last brand new episode of Our Fake History you will be getting until September 7th of 2021. So you won't have to wait that long. It's about 5 weeks away. But season 7 will begin on September 7th of 2021. Now, in the meantime, you will still be hearing my voice. I'm never that far away. Every week between now and September 7th, I am going to be releasing an OFH throwback episode. So that's one of my favorite episodes from the past seasons. And at the beginning of each of those shows, I'm going to be recording a short introduction to give you some of my thoughts looking back on those episodes. So over the next 5 weeks, keep checking your feed. Once a week, you will get an OFH throwback episode with a few words at the beginning from me looking back. Okay, that's all for today, and that is all for season 6. Thank you so much for supporting this show. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Thank you for being beautiful human beings. Like I said, I could not do this if I didn't have such a dedicated and wonderful group of listeners. I am humbled by that. I hope you stick with the show onwards into season 7 and beyond. So thank you, thank you, thank you again. I don't know what else I could say. Before we go this week, of course, I need to give a very special shout out to the following people. Big ups to Daniel Runyon, to Jack Granado, to Sean Kennedy, to Oso the Prophet, to Andrew Cheetah, to Chris Howells, to the Lucas D, to Adam Roeder, to Simone Walsh, to Shawshank, to Dave White, to Isabella Bledsoe, to Joe Hartman, to Jay Chima, to Scotty Mullet, to Jessica Waters, to Jeremy Malenfant, to Nikhil Cardale, to Paulina to Paulina Zlatcha. I know I said that wrong. Sorry, Paulina. And to Murray Tevlin, and finally to Adam. All of you folks have decided to pledge at $5 or more every month on Patreon. So, you know, you are especially beautiful human beings. Thank you so much for your support. Everyone supporting at $3 or up just got a brand new extra episode on the Ethiopian Jews, or the Beta Israel. If you think you would like to support on Patreon, go to patreon.com/ourfakehistory. While I'm off on my little break, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can always send me an email at ourfakehistory@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Facebook at facebook.com/ourfakehistory. You can find me on Twitter at ourfakehistory, and you can find me on Instagram at ourfakehistory. The theme music for the show comes to us from Dirty Church. You can check out Dirty Church at dirtychurch.bandcamp.com. And all the other music you heard on the show today was written and recorded by me. My name is Sebastian Major. And remember, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't history. No, I don't like it. I like it my way better. My name is Sebastian Major, and remember, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't real.